Welcome to the Terrorist Therapist Show on Renegade Talk Radio with your host, Dr. Carol. Though you may not realize that the ongoing threat of terrorism is affecting your life and that of your loved ones. Each week, Dr. Carol analyzes the hottest topics in terror and helps you and your family reach your dreams despite living in a time of terror.
Independence forever? Terrorists say no. Welcome to the Terrorist Therapist Show. I'm Dr. Carol, a psychiatrist and your terrorist therapist. Yes, today I'm recording this on July 4th, Independence Day. Independence Day is America's birthday. It's the commemoration of the adoption of the Declaration of Independence on July 4th, 1776. It was when the 13 American colonies separated from Great Britain. We got our independence. And these days, people think of July 4th, Independence Day, more in regard to barbecues, hot dogs, day off from work, and parades. And talking about parades, right before I sat down to do this recording, and after I had been preparing, and I thought, I better check with the news to see if anything new has happened on July 4th that I should know about when I do this podcast. And lo and behold, talking about parades, lo and behold, there was a parade in Highland Park, an affluent suburb of Chicago. And there was a 4th of July parade where a shooter just shot and killed 6 people and injured dozens. Now, we don't know that he was a terrorist. This is just fresh off the presses. So we don't know. All we know is that the gunman is still on the loose at this time. He is considered armed and dangerous. He's described as a white male with dark hair, 18 to 20 years old. He was wearing a blue or white T-shirt. And interestingly, a witness said, quote, he was very military style, methodical in the way he was crouched and shooting, unquote. So could this be someone from the military, American military, who has PTSD or... which is really, 4th of July with all the firecrackers and so on triggers a lot of military people because it reminds them of when they were in the military and they were, those sounds were gunshots. Well, in Chicago, they were gunshots. So we have to wait and see what happens with that. What I'm talking about today, my original plan and what I'm sticking to, besides telling you about that, and it'll be interesting to see if that does turn out to be a terror attack in Chicago, but what I want to talk to you about today is how America's independence is not assured. You know, we have... I mean, when I was growing up, that was before 9/11 and before terrorists, really radical Islamist terrorists, were really much of a threat or that I knew of when I was growing up. But nowadays, they are and they still are, and Americans are very complacent when it comes to independence, thinking that we will always have our independence. However, they forget that terrorists have something else in mind, and they have been planning for years and years and years to take over America, to make us abide by Sharia law, and so on. And so I'm going to be talking to you today about the dangers reminding you of, well, basically the message is not to take American independence for granted. And I'm going to be talking to you about the threats, current threats, some threats that have been in the news recently that are examples of the threats that we still face. So, for example, we face the threat of terrorists coming from other countries and perpetrating attacks in America. We also have the threat or under the threat of terrorists, people who are living in America, but who came from outside and are now living in America, who are plotting attacks. And then Americans who are inside America or who started inside America and who are plotting attacks. And then I'm going to talk about there are other ways to attack America. And there are people lobbying in Washington, D.C. to attack America in different ways. In other words, not by violence or suicide vests or something like that, although these are some of these people have endorsed that. But there are political ways to attack America in terms of giving terrorists advantages. So, and then at the end, I'll have a surprise at the end. Okay, so let's start with terrorists outside America coming into America and potentially planning attacks. So as an example of this, as a recent example of this, I will tell you about the fact that there are terrorists. Now, I've mentioned this before, but I'm going to give you some specific recent examples. There is a terrorist screening database, and that has on it known or reasonably suspected of being involved of terrorist activities, people who are known or reasonably suspected of being involved in terrorist activities. Now, the terrorist screening database, obviously, is supposed to keep terrorists out of America. However, with the craziness, the tsunami at the southern border, and apparently at the northern border, too, we haven't been hearing as much about that. But the Border Patrol encountered 50 migrants just in this year in the southern on the southern border. And one example of this is a person who's an example of this is Nardo Garcia Armando. So on April 18th, well, he came into America. And he was released through the southern border. And on April 18th, he was released by the Border Patrol. Released, get this, released by the Border Patrol, even though he is on the terrorist screening database. And he was released with an ankle bracelet. So don't worry about it. He has an ankle bracelet on. But he wasn't arrested until 2 weeks after his name was flagged by the FBI. So it's a good thing he didn't do anything in those 2 weeks. So then on April 21st, the FBI matches him to the terrorist watch list. Then on May 4th, he was authorized. There was an authorized rearrest. And then on May 6th, he was arrested in Florida. And on May 9th, he was released into ICE custody. Then I've talked to you about another example of this in a previous podcast, Ahmed Shihab. In June of this year, the Border Patrol arrested, as I said, 50 migrants on the terrorist screening database, the watch list. And this is compared to 15. So this is 50 in this year so far. And there were 15 in 2021. There were 3 in 2020. 0 in 2019, 6 in 2018, and 2 in 2017. So needless to say, it has gone up tremendously. Now, apparently also at the northern border, there were a total of 192 encounters. And I guess of terrorists on the terrorist watch list, which is really very interesting because we don't really hear about terrorists coming in from the northern border. I wonder why we don't hear about it. Could it be because the administration wants terrorists to come in, wants lots of people to come in, including terrorists, so that they will vote perhaps in the way that they want? Okay, now, here's an example, an interesting example of an outside terrorist who are already in, who were living already, they didn't just come across the border, they were already living in the United States, and this one was living in Brooklyn, and his name was Dilkhayot Kasimov, 34 years old. He was sentenced in June to 15 years in prison for aiding the Islamic State, for aiding ISIS. And he was involved in plots to strike within the United States, including even possibly killing Barack Obama, which is kind of interesting. He is a citizen, he was a citizen, or he still is a citizen of Uzbekistan. So again, this is a question about, who the administration allowing all of these people in. It's not clear how he got in. You know, I don't know that he came from the southern border or the northern border. But there are very lax policies for letting people come in from countries that are known to have a lot of terrorists. He was, according to U.S. Attorney Richard Donahue, Kasimov, quote, was part of a conspiracy in which he willingly and eagerly sought to help fund a foreign fighter's travel and expenses in Syria to wage violent jihad, unquote. Assistant Attorney General for National Security said, quote, Kasimov is an ISIS supporter who collected and gave money to another individual to fund his travel to join the terrorist group. And then a U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of New York testified that he was part of a group of individuals who sought to travel to Syria, like he was going to travel to Syria, not just fund the others, to join ISIS or to fund the others, to bring foreign fighters from ISIS here. But he wasn't only interested in Syria. Actually, he came to the attention of law enforcement in August 2014. He was just convicted in June. But he came to the attention of law enforcement in August 2014 after he and this group posted on a Uzbek language site, Uzbek language pro-ISIS website, saying they would kill Barack Obama if they were ordered to by ISIS. Now, it's really kind of ironic because Obama is the president who has made us the most vulnerable to terrorists than any other president before or after, except for Biden, where Biden is being directed by Obama. In general, and including to making us more vulnerable to terrorists. Now, as I've talked about in previous podcasts, not for a while though, you know, I've talked about how really Obama, was trained in he has deep, you know, his father, his stepfather has deep Muslim radical, he's not acknowledging the radical part, but roots. So it's no wonder that he is made us the most vulnerable to terrorists. Yes, I know there are going to be some people listening to this who are saying that that's not true, but this is what my research has come up with. And his actions have supported, the hell with my research, it's what he's done. So that was 2014. Then he was convicted. He was convicted in 2019. He was just sentenced just this past month, but he was convicted in 2019 when he was named in an indictment that charged three other men in a plot to assist the Islamic State. So, and these his friends, you know, who were his co-conspirators, And there's no word about him being deported after he completes his prison sentence, which probably he probably won't have to serve, you know, all of it because people are getting out. He got 15 years, but you know what? we'll see how many he actually serves. Anyway, he and his co-conspirators, were involved in these plans with ISIS, as I just mentioned. But there are other foreign individuals who are security risks inside the United States, and I'll give you some examples. A Somali Muslim migrant who stabbed multiple patrons at a restaurant owned by an Israeli Arab Christian. Ahmad Khan Rahami, an Afghan Muslim migrant who set off bombs in New York City and New Jersey. Arkan Settin, a Turkish Muslim migrant who murdered 5 people in a mall in Burlington, Washington. Now, these are just some of the past ones. These aren't as recent as the one that I started with, Kasimov. Dahir Aden, another Somali Muslim migrant who stabbed mall shoppers in St. Cloud, Minnesota while screaming Allahu Akbar. And Abdul Razek Artan, another Somali Muslim migrant who injured 9 people with car and knife attacks at Ohio State University. So these are some of the people who have come to America, who have gotten into America, and who have perpetrated attacks. Okay. Wow, time flies when you're talking about terrorist attacks. All right, I will stop this segment. And in the next one, I will talk to you about this Kansas mother who was born in Kansas, you know, raised in Kansas, went to the college in America, and she became an ISIS battalion leader. So stay tuned. Welcome back to the Terrorist Therapist Show, where we're talking about independence forever, terrorists say no. And in the first segment, I've been just telling you about some of those terrorists who have had in mind taking over America with attacks. Now, this is, you know, it's one thing when people come from the outside and, you know, I mean, that's bad. Obviously, that's bad enough. But when there are people who are born in America, who have all the freedoms to enjoy this wonderful country, and who then become, join ISIS, you know, that obviously they're traitors, and that is just more of a conundrum. I mean, obviously, as a psychiatrist, I do have to put some of these people on my couch, because I would love to know what turned people like Allison Fluke Ekron into a terrorist. Clearly it has something to do with her time in college, and I'll tell you why I'm saying that. She turned ISIS battalion leader, and why she's in the news now is because she just pled guilty. She accepted a plea deal. And she is from Kansas. She left the U.S. to join terrorist movements in the Middle East. She just pled guilty to organizing and leading an all-female military battalion for ISIS. She's 42. She left the U.S. in 2008 following her second husband. Now, clearly she must have also been scarred by the divorce from her first husband, because her second husband, Volkan Ekron, is a terrorist, or was a terrorist. He died. But she followed her second husband, Volkan, to Egypt with her 4 children before moving to Libya. Now imagine that. Not only did she risk her own life and make this decision to become a terrorist for herself, but she took her 4 children. Not going to be voted Mother of the Year anytime soon. She traveled with him to Turkey and Syria and Iraq, and eventually led a women's center in Raqqa. She provided medical services, childcare, educational services about ISIS teaching. She taught them. She taught little kids. I mean, that makes it even worse. She taught little kids about radical Islamist views. In 2017, she was put in charge of an all-female ISIS military battalion known as Katiba Nusayba. She trained women and girls how to use automatic AK-47s, how to fire these assault rifles, grenades, and suicide belts. She also, in addition to training them on weapons, she also provided training in martial arts. She was very talented. I mean, you know, obviously she was a smart woman and a very accomplished woman in you know, who learned all these things. She probably learned, of course, most of them there in the Middle East. But still, she was able to be a teacher. And she taught them martial arts, medical training, VBIED driving courses, ISIS religious classes, and how to pack and prep a go bag, you know, a to-go bag with rifles and other military supplies. So she pled guilty to conspiring to provide material support or resources to ISIS. And she faces a maximum of 20 years in prison. We'll see how many she gets. Let's see. What we know about her, she was formerly from Topeka, Kansas. And this battalion that she was the head of, they had the job of defending ISIS interests in the Syrian city of Raqqa, and they were supposed to defend ISIS against enemies of ISIS. So who are enemies of ISIS? You know, it would be American soldiers and other nationals who came there to help Americans against ISIS. And she also trained them how to sneak behind enemy positions with AK-47s and detonate explosives after the gun ammunition ran out. What else? She taught more than 100 women and girls, I may have said that. Now, her background. She studied biology. I guess that's useful if you're going to be a terrorist and do weapons. I don't know. At the University of Kansas, and later she studied at Earlham College in Indiana. So she married her second husband. As I said, she, you know, went to the Middle East. And she, besides doing all these other things that I mentioned, she assisted her husband with reviewing and summarizing documents that were stolen during the September 11th 2012 attack on the U.S. compound in Benghazi. She provided details, so she translated them, she provided details from these documents to leaders of the terrorist organization Ansar al-Sharia. So this husband, her second husband, who she left the U.S. with, eventually became a leader of ISIS snipers in Syria, and he was then killed in a drone strike. Now, what do you think that did to her? It made her feel all the more devoted to ISIS and against the U.S. She was very, she was very sexy. She was very, she was very marriage-minded. She married two other ISIS men who died for the cause. At least she made them happy before they died, I presume. And this included another one who was killed in a U.S. drone strike. So again, each time her husbands were killed, you know, she became more anti-American. And she also helped ISIS figure out where to attack on U.S. soil, like where there would be the highest number of people in America, and you know, what would be the best targets, including colleges. She wanted them. Some of her suggestions included parking a vehicle filled with explosives at a shopping mall parking garage and detonating it from a cell phone. I mean, that's been done. So, but anyhow, maybe it was her idea. She also discussed ideas about how to attack the campus of a Midwestern college involving explosives. So that is why I say that, you know, remember, she went to college in the Midwest, and clearly she did not have a good experience there. And so that's why she, you know, had came up with the idea of attacking a college, a Midwestern college. In 2018, she asked an ISIS member to get a message to her family saying that she was dead so that the U.S. government would stop looking for her, and she wanted to die in Syria as a martyr. So she stayed affiliated with ISIS until around May 2019 when she was smuggled out of ISIS territory. She married a fifth time, and she turned herself over. I guess maybe she didn't like that husband, or he died or something. She turned herself over to a local Syrian police force in the summer of 2021, and she was kept in a prison until she was extradited to the U.S., and where she now faces 20 years. Okay, so now let's start to talk about this other way of attacking America, which is through Congress, through lobbying Congress and other politicians. Now, there is a terror-linked Muslim group, terror-linked Muslim umbrella group. In other words, that where there are members in this group from various Muslim organizations and who have links to terror organizations. I mean, this is not just a nice group of Muslims. And again, not all terrorists are Muslims, and not all Muslims are terrorists, of course. But this particular group that I'm going to tell you about does have links to terrorists. And they are coming to Congress, as they do every year. This is their seventh year, but they came in June. And they met with as many congressional representatives as they could. And the name of this group, these are hundreds of Islamists from around the country. They came with an extremist agenda. And the group is called the U.S. Council of Muslim Organizations. And they descended upon the Capitol. And they have major terrorist ties that I'm going to tell you about. And some of the, it's not just their ties, but some of the people who are acting as the delegates of this organization are just as radical. So when we come back, I'm going to tell you about some of the specific people who are involved with this U.S. Council of Muslim Organizations. And what their agenda is, what they were talking to Congress about. And you will see how this is equally dangerous as the terrorist attacks that I was talking about in the first segment. The first segment was primarily about people who were going to be perpetrating terrorist attacks in America. Well, actually, the woman from Kansas, she wanted to attack colleges and so on, also in America. So all of those people that I was just talking to you about were terrorists who wanted to, were involved in organizations and plans to perpetrate attacks in America, violent attacks, you know. But now we're going to talk, in the next segment, we're going to talk about the attacks, so to speak, on Congress. the attacks on the minds of Congress people. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Terrorist Therapist Show, which I am recording on July 4th. The purpose of which is to help people not be complacent in America and think that Independence Day is every day and is going to last forever. Because terrorists have another idea. So today's show is called Independence Forever. Terrorists say no. It's not going to be Independence Forever if terrorists have their way. So I've been talking about the different threats that there are, terrorist, radical Islamist terrorist threats from outside the country to perpetrate attacks on America, from people even born in America who want to perpetrate attacks on America. And now I'm talking about the organization, the U.S. Council of Muslim Organizations. And that is armed, not with weapons, not with suicide belts today. I mean, when they came to we hope they weren't, when they went to Congress in June for their annual lobbying efforts, with an agenda to attack America from the inside. Again, not with weapons, but with policy. So I'm going to tell you about some of the people who are involved with this. As I mentioned previously, this organization has major terrorist ties. Some of the people who are even the delegates who are meeting in Washington are just as radical. So, let me tell you about, well, first of all, it was founded, this organization, the USCMO, was founded in March 2014 to provide mainstream American Islamist groups a bigger voice and influence in politics. Now, that sounds okay, right? Sort of. except the fact that it's really, I mean, it's not so much. It would be okay. I mean, it sounds benign, except that wait till you hear who are some of the people involved. Some of the groups who are involved in this organization of groups, you know, this organization of organizations, right? Some of the groups involved include the Hamas terrorist group, the Hamas-linked council, on Council on American Islamic Relations, CARE. You know, CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations, you know, which is, that's where, that purports to be sort of a PR group after 9/11. But really it's not, so the idea was to prevent discrimination of Muslims. You know, that sounds great. And yes, I totally agree. There should not be any discrimination of Muslims. However, it's really, it's really hiding as being a group about that. I mean, it does some of that. It files lots of lawsuits, for example, for about discrimination, but it has a much darker agenda than that. Also included in this organization of organizations is the South Asian terror-related ICNA. Also the Muslim Brotherhood Associated Muslim American Society. Now this is the seventh annual, this June, a month ago, was the seventh annual Muslim Advocacy Day on Capitol Hill. It also has an organization there, Islamic Relief. And which is an organization, both ICNA and Islamic Relief are organizations that have been banned by a number of nations due to their terrorist financing. But they are part of this main organization, Council of Muslim Organization, U.S. Council of Muslims Organization. U.S. Council of Muslim Organizations, USCMO, this umbrella organization has all of these organizations in it that have ties, radical Islamist ties. and they are sort of hidden, you know, they hide behind these other names and other claims to be just, you know, trying to have democracy for Muslims, or, you know, not be discriminated against, or other good things. Okay, so on the board of this USCMO is a man named Mazen Mokhtar, and he is the former administrator for the now, he was the former administrator for the now defunct Al-Qaeda recruitment and financing site. And this site referred to suicide, he himself referred to suicide bombings as, quote, an effective method of attacking the enemy. Then we have Siraj Wahaj, a Brooklyn imam who was named a party to the 1993 World Trade Center bombing and who has been linked to the bomb maker of the attack, who's named Clement Rodney Hampton L. And also linked to AMP Executive Director Osama Abirshade. And this man, Osama, threatened in January 2020, quote, Palestinians, if they don't take what they want willingly, they will take it forcefully. We're going to liberate our land, whether they like it or don't like it. So they threatened Israel. So those are the people on the board, some of the people on the board of this USCMO. But now some of the delegates who are coming to Congress and talk, I'm sure the board members are talking to Congress people too, but some of the delegates, not on the board, but just delegates at this Muslim Advocacy Day, they are just as radical as the board members. So we have, for example, Syed Hamar Ahmed, and in February 2020, following a debate he participated in at a school, he said, quote, I hate white people. He called himself a terrorist, and at the suggestion of an acquaintance, he joked that he, quote, should have threatened to blow up the school. These are the people who are meeting with Congress and promoting their agenda, and I'll tell you about their agenda after I tell you about some of these people. Another member of this group, another delegate, is CARE California CEO and apologist for Al-Qaeda operatives held at Guantanamo, Hussam Elouch. And this past May, he called for Israel's destruction. And he said that Palestinians have a legal right to resist, meaning commit terrorist acts in Israel. So a lot of these people, you know, not only want to take over America, but they want to destroy Israel. Another delegate is CARE San Francisco Executive Director, Zara Bilou. In January 2007, she wrote that she had thought of committing, listen to this, she thought of committing suicide after she noticed a pro-Israel poster on a San Francisco train. Now, you don't have to be a psychiatrist to realize that there is something wrong with this woman. She saw a pro-Israel poster on a San Francisco train, and she thought of killing herself. I mean, perhaps she thought she would be a martyr if she wrote something, you know, explaining why she killed herself. I don't know. But then in December 2008, she posted on her blog that she was thinking of starting a website to recruit volunteers to attack Israel. In March 2008, she had labeled U.S. troops, quote, scum. In September 2007, she wrote, apartheid, Israel is not a country. Anyway, so she was obviously another anti-Israel terrorist. Now, here are some of the agenda items that they are supposed to be, and I'm sure did, talk to lobby members of Congress about. So there are three main agenda items. The first one is the Targeted Violence and Terrorism Prevention Organization that the government, that the U.S. government, Department of Homeland Security, has created. And so they have a grant program, and they provide funding to governmental and non-governmental entities. It's a counterterrorism organization or, you know, plan. And but the USCMO sees it as targeting Islamic militants. I mean, counterterrorism, that's what it would be doing. So the delegates were instructed to lobby in favor of resolutions that would weaken it, severely weaken it. We don't want any counterterrorism organizations in the Department of Homeland Security. No, no. Second issue they were lobbying about is for citizenship for evacuees from Afghanistan. Now, as I've talked about in previous podcasts, a number of Afghans who were evacuated had security, significant security concerns. They weren't vetted sufficiently, and they're, you know, this is an laying in wait, really. We have an accident waiting to happen, a terrorist attacks waiting to happen with these Afghans who were not our friends. Yes, a lot of them did help Americans in Afghanistan, but there were others who snuck in who are not our friends. So several Afghans who have been applying for asylum in the U.S. have associations with the Taliban. But and listen to this. This umbrella organization, the USCMO, this umbrella organization of lots of organizations who have terrorist ties, they are officially involved in assisting in the resettlement of Afghans. Like, hello? That is a clear conflict of interest. Yet that is what our government is allowing to happen. And if you remember, I was mentioning about Obama, who is really behind Biden, since Biden doesn't know what he's doing from day to day. Obama is able to again make our country even more vulnerable to terrorists. So these delegates talking, lobbying Congress, they want Congress to, quote, allow the tens of thousands of Afghan evacuees to apply to become lawful permanent residents 1 year after arrival. Now, there is no way that the tens of thousands of Afghan arrivals could be vetted sufficiently to become permanent residents within 1 year. It's just impossible. The third issue that they're lobbying about concerns Islamophobia. This term, I mean, yes, there is such a thing as Islamophobia. It is a bad thing. People should not, you know, people should care about other people for what's in their heart, not because of how they look. Okay. But there is, this word is being thrown around to silence people who criticize radical Islamist terrorism. And so these delegates were instructed to urge the members of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee to adopt the International Combating Islamophobia Act. This was introduced, and I think I mentioned this in a previous podcast, in terms of it being introduced by Ilhan Omar. Ilhan Omar is a terrorist, really, within Congress. And very, very, very dangerous. And so she introduced this legislation, and they are lobbying to support it. And it would establish a special envoy office to monitor and combat, quote, this act would establish a special envoy office to monitor and combat international Islamophobia. But the main part is in America, you know, using this to stifle free speech, to stifle counterterrorism, really. And they are all three agenda items that are made to, purpose of which are to, is to make America more vulnerable to terrorism. And this is their seventh year of coming to Congress. And, you know, in the years, in prior years, when Obama and Biden weren't the president, they didn't make very much headway. But now they are, it's a big danger because there is more of a friendlier Congress, or some of the people who are, you know, under the direction of the White House, it's a friendlier Congress. Now, last but not least, so those are some examples of terrorists wanting to destroy us, wanting to take away our independence. And so who is going to protect us? Now, do you think the people who cry for defund the police, protest and defund the police, and who are having an incredible amount of success in terms of we're losing police by the day, whether it's because of these protesters killing them, injuring them, or police thinking to themselves, what am I doing this for? I don't get paid enough to risk my life. To all these people, with all these people who are trying to kill us. I mean, we are losing people. They're retiring. If they're close to retirement, they're thinking, why do I need to spend an extra couple of years? Some of them are more than a couple, you know, they're quitting or retiring. They don't want to, it's not worth it. And besides the danger, I mean, because there was always some danger of getting killed or injured, but of course it's risen in the past few years, like since George Floyd, it's risen to unbelievable proportions that they're injuring and killing police. But it's also the disrespect. I mean, being a policeman was at one time considered a very status. That was status, And, you know, coming from neighborhoods, like you have the friendly policeman coming to school, elementary school, talking about what they do. And that's what got people to want to be a policeman, besides other things. People who have had police have helped their family, all different things. And it was a very proud thing to be. Now, police, you know, by some people, I mean, there's this movement afoot. There has been this movement afoot, especially since George Floyd, with protests and so on, to attack the police. And so, and not only that, but there are these, even when the police arrest people for doing criminal acts, then they have to, they arrest them, and the judges and the district attorneys who are progressive are letting the people out without bail or with low bail, giving small sentences. And in Chicago, which is kind of ironic because, you know, I was going to tell you about this. And then, as I said, right before I started to talk on the podcast, I saw the attack in Chicago, you know, the attack on the July 4th parade in a suburb of Chicago. Now, you want to know what they do? As I said, we don't know yet. I don't know yet as I'm recording this whether he's a terrorist or not, but he killed people and injured people. And if he were arrested, you know, and brought into a court, depending upon the court, he might well be told to, he might well not be held or given, you know, small bail, or, you know, he would probably be held to some degree because this is a big deal attacking a parade, but, you know, it would not likely get a very long sentence. But you know what they're doing in Chicago? Instead of holding people in jail or giving them long prison sentences, they are doing peace circles. Peace circles. In Chicago, this year so far, there have been 1,120 people shot. I mean, Chicago is one of the places, Chicago, New York, these are some of the places where there is really high crime and high deaths. So The police defunders, the people who are out to defund the police, have been tasked in Chicago to come up with restorative justice alternatives. Alternatives to what's called the three Ps, police, prosecutors, and prisons, right? We shouldn't have police, prosecutors, and prisons. We should have P, peace circles. I wonder if that's why they came up with another P. In these peace circles, what they do is to ask the criminals to apologize to their victims. The criminal meets with the victim and says, I'm sorry, and then leaves a free man to commit more crimes. Now, there are pro-crime politicians in Chicago, I mean, you know, who probably live in another state. Well, like, they couldn't live in another state, but they probably live someplace where they think they're protected. But now that there's been this mass shooting in an affluent suburb of Chicago, maybe they're going to realize that they're not protected. There are also peace circles in school, and now there's a new thing called a trained facilitator of these peace circles, a new job. And people are calling themselves trained facilitators. They're hanging out their shingles, and that's what they're doing. Now, they're saying that it comes from Indian culture, and there are peace circles in Indian culture, but that's not what this is. I mean, you know, it's an insult to the Indians. There are different examples of people who have been, I mean, there are countless examples of people who have been, instead of getting a term, a sentence that is appropriate to their crime, they have been allowed to be in peace circles, say they're sorry, and then they go out and have killed again. Now, another example of someone another example of protection that we would be counting on against terrorists would be West Point, you know, the cadets who are trained at West Point. Well, instead of training the cadets about military tactics and strategies and, you know, how to protect America, like if they go and serve, instead they are being taught critical race theory and anti-whiteness. They're being taught to be ashamed of America and to feel bad about the country that they are then going to be sent out theoretically to protect. So not only are there all these different ways that terrorists are trying, still have not given up trying to attack us, but we are losing our protectors. Think about that when you look back on July 4th and think about hot dogs and barbecues instead of how fortunate we are and how precious our independence is. Please tell people about how important it is to protect our independence. We cannot just be complacent and count on it. Well, thank you for listening to the Terrorist Therapist Show. I'm Dr. Carol, your terrorist therapist. I'm so upset about what this means so much to me, what I've been talking about, that I got rattled. So thank you for listening. If you would like to find out more about terrorism from me, your terrorist therapist, visit my website, terroristtherapist.com. And if you're a parent or teacher and want to build stronger nests for your kids to become more resilient, check out my new award-winning book, Lions and Tigers and Terrorists, Oh My, How to Protect Your Child in a Time of Terror. It's the first and only book about terrorism for kids. You can find it wherever books are sold or directly from the publisher at terrorismforkids.com. Terrorism4kids.com. I'm Dr. Carol, your terrorist therapist.
Thank you for listening to the Terrorist Therapist Show on Renegade Talk Radio with your host, Dr. Carol. We hope listening to the show has made you feel calmer, more resilient, and more able to reach your dreams despite living in a time of terror. You can also check out past shows on Renegade Talk Archives for more insights.